I went up somewhat reluctantly. I don't know why. I didn't feel particularly close to her, but she was awfully affectionate. I don't know. She was obviously affectionate, and there was just no response on my part. I have to break here, darling. Turn off this tape. I guess there's a little more yet left. And she showed me off as her big date and all that. August 45, September 45, I entered Northwestern University, and I will take up there my beloved darling and Odell on the next tape. I want you to know, though, that I love you very much. Well, the memory for me has absolutely no relation to the motion picture which it's from. It just reminded me of you. It did the very first time I ever heard it. So, how are you today? You called last night. Thank God you did. Incidentally, I'm recording over a message to Lisa Davis, which I decided not to do. Very hard to phase in background music with the recording circumstances that I have. I just happen to have a few minutes to myself. It's either too loud or too brassy. Also, I don't have good tone control. Ian, thanks very much for calling last night. I'm awfully glad you did. As I mentioned to you Saturday morning when I called, Kathy and I had a rather long talk, and she knows rather definitely what the score is all the way around. And I think is a lot more at home with it, I think, if you get at home with these things. I called you Saturday morning, so you wouldn't worry. As a matter of fact, well, pardon me. You would be surprised at how difficult it is to find any time around here where I can just talk to you. And I want it so badly. There's so much on my mind that just boils up to say to you. I'm glad you reassured me about Lisa Davis's kidding about that. You know, I hate to feel that you think the children are a disease. I know you don't. You're a loving mother. And that's the way I think of you, Ann. I think of you so tenderly. In all ways. And I want you to think of yourself that way. Sure, once in a while you could half kiddingly pass off a joke. But I know you as a tender person. This is one passage in this number I don't like. This is a 33 and a third. Which I have on tape elsewhere. And I was going to play a tape. There's some numbers on this one that were on the back of some of your recordings back in 1939, and they always kind of remind me of you. I wanted to find a Benny Goodman number around. But I can't find it in the few minutes that I have while Kathy takes John to the movie and the rest of the family are upstairs somewhere. I may have to break this off at any moment, dear. I want you to understand something, dear. I love you. I love you very, very much, and I hope you don't get tired of my telling you that. Every bit of appreciation to Artie Shaw that I have to you from 1939, 1940, as well as so many other things. I wanted to get biographical on this tape. There's a lot of autobiography that I want to tell you about that occurs to me from time to time. But this is going to be a very short recording session. And I have to mentally time about how long it takes Kathy to arrive at the Des Plaines Theater where she took John. I was going to drop him off there. I wonder if you ever saw Love Story. Not Love Story, Summer of 42. And Carnal Knowledge. I haven't seen them yet either. Every time I hear those violins, I think of that New Year's Eve party at Buzzy Graham's with you dancing with Happy Hun and cutting in on me. Thought I may as well bring you into my reminiscences. You're wearing a black dress and black stockings, and the stockings just came above your knees, and you swung around one in his arms. Frenzy was playing. I can find that tape, too. I sent you that record. The more you tell me about yourself in these tapes, Ann, the more I love you. I want you to know that. The more I am able to fit myself into your eyes, your being at that time, since our backgrounds were roughly similar, the more I admire you, respect you, love you, get more affection for you, and feel inclined to stick by you, and the more I feel you are entitled to happiness. So, darling, I want you to call me when you feel like talking, and I will frequently want to be talking to you, and I'll be calling you in order to reassure myself that at least you're coping with it. You relieved my anxiety a little bit about coming down to see you. I wanted to. I had figured on doing so either this week, the 2nd of December, or the 2nd of January. I could borrow money to do it. I might borrow it. Might have borrowed it from you. I could get it from a credit union. Except the less ripples that are made in the process of doing it, the better it'd be all the way around. So, sweetheart, you've got some holidays coming up, and you're going to be lonely. And I'd like you to play these tapes, you know, and kind of remember that I'm with you. This was on the back of one of your records. I think it was on the back of Traffic Jam. My heart stood still. Every time I've heard this song in my life, it reminded me of you. I would love to spend some time with you, going out, walking around, talking, maybe traveling some places locally, dancing with you when Charlotte isn't around. Because songs like this, memories that I have of you, bring back just, months, days, years, and decades of memories that I've had of you over these many years. Reminds me of your Rivermere basement apartment with your dad's cigar smoke around. And every time I smelt that cigar smoke in any apartment, it always reminded me of you. The warm, generous, really friendly person you were. Yeah, God, I appreciate that about you. I wish that we had been able to talk to each other in much more meaningful terms in those days than we are now. But thank God, Ian, that we are now. Isn't that wonderful? I think so. To me, it's worth telephone money, you know. It's like recapturing a part of life that I never thought I'd have. And you fit into it the way nobody else ever can. I want you to know that. You told me in your last tape, I'll never know what I mean to you, and maybe I won't. Maybe someday I'll figure it out. I think that the dearest thing you said yesterday, so far, is that in case Ruth saw me coming out of the shower naked or something, that would make you mad because you wouldn't want Ruth to see me naked. I just love you for that. If I am going to be anybody's personal property in this life, I want to be yours. I want you to know that, Ann. I want to consider myself yours. I want to be yours. And I want to bring you joy in the process. Darling, I love you. And I want you to know that. I've got the radio up so nobody else around here can hear it, but I want you to know that I love you. And when I talk about how short is your nightgown and what are you wearing and so forth, and I'm not talking sex, I'm talking love. If I were to tell you that I went to bed that night mentally snipping a foot of nightgown off all the way around and featured you sitting there in your chair talking to me in that way, I was thinking love. I would love to be with you. I can't. This is a little while after the previous part of the recording. I'll tell you what I was doing in the interim. I was at the garage. I finally have a few minutes to myself. I was out in the garage doing some work, and I had the tape recorder out there. And, Ann, do you know that I get so emotionally worked up when I listen to your tape, your laugh, your words, your just your normal run of conversation. But I almost wonder if I can continue this. Really, I hear you, and you laugh just the way you used to laugh back in Alger Court, Rivermere, when I used to come visit you. And you have your friends here and there. And it's just like I could almost never get a moment with you alone. And when I got a moment with you alone, I couldn't think of what to say. This is almost what this reminds me of. I want you so badly, and I want to be with you. I want to. I want you. I want us to be alone. Now, it seems that we never can be. It's so difficult, unbelievably difficult, for me to make a tape or to listen to yours. Because somebody is always popping up, especially to make a tape to you. Oh, I would love to have a musical background. I'd love to. There's some other things I'd love to put on for you. Instantly, I deleted something of what I said before. I can't have you. I can't put that on tape. Oh, I don't know. Stupid social custom. I love you. I love you, Ann. I suppose you're going to get tired of my saying it. But I don't want to leave anything back when I tell you that. I think that everything is so badly strained and masticated now when it finally comes out to you that it's almost free of being. You know, it almost lacks humanity. And I hate that. Do you mind if I tell you, quite frankly, this, that I do miss you so much when I play your tapes? I haven't told you this before. That, I just remember you so well when we were kids, and you haven't changed a bit. You talk about your being a cyclops with your glasses on. Do you think that would make any difference to me, Ann? Or you're getting fat, or this kind of thing. I don't care about that. You're Ann Dowdell, and this is really what counts. I don't care if you're fat or you're skinny. Sure, I used to love your... I loved your chubbiness. You were just absolutely delightful. And all those people you went with, all those boys, this doesn't surprise me at all. My only real, real regret for you is that you've experienced any unhappiness at all in life, Ann, because, darling, you didn't deserve it. You didn't deserve it, and you keep saying, Barrett, you don't know what I'm really like. And I suppose you nag, and you gripe, and you bitch, and you this, and you that, and so forth. And so does everyone else. You don't know me either. I'm a pill. I keep telling you that. Oh, God, Ann, I don't know. Had you and I got married, it would have taken an awful lot of re-education for me that I think only heartbreak and trials and so forth would have accomplished in order for me to be anywhere satisfactory to you. And you know something, too? I have a terrible self-acceptance problem still. I was almost having difficulty really believing that you loved me. I keep thinking, Ann, you don't know me. I'm not really the kind of a man you want. I'm not this, what you really want is a big, kind of a composite of, Power Hearn, who was sweet and considerate, Al McGuire, who was a real hunk of man. I know hunk of man. I would never pretend to be. Somebody who would really, really give you the kind of love and care and consideration that you really need. I almost feel happier if you'd think I was. If you just tell people, oh, Barrett Andrews, he was a good egg. He was like a brother to me. He understood me and he liked me. He loved me. You know, tell people I love you. I don't know why I say this, Sam, because I really wanted you to love me all your life. All my life, I should say. I really have. I can't think of anything in the world I have wanted more than for you to love me. Now that you do, I'm having difficulty accepting it. I know you do. I know you mean what you say. It isn't on your end of this. It's on my end that I have such a difficult time. I want it so badly that I almost don't dare believe it. And yet I do. Something says yes, she knows what she's talking about. She means it. I know you mean it. I feel so inadequate, though, at trying to make you happy. Yes, of course I'll continue writing. I cannot feature myself not writing. There may be a few days going by here and there when you won't be getting a letter. But play the tape or something. Remember that it isn't anything deliberate on my part. I'll write you. I want to stay with you. I want you to, if my writing gives you comfort, I want you to have that comfort. I most certainly will stay with you and write you. Believe me, will you, please? I want to try to find a tape that's longer than 600 feet. This is 1 mil 600 foot. I want to try to find some. Ian? I had to answer the phone. Somebody for Gene. Nobody's here. Will you remember, do me one favor, please. Every time you say that I'm Ann Dowdell, I'm not important, Ann Dowdell isn't important, you almost rip me to pieces. You're really undoing about 2.5 years of work that I'm trying to do. Now, if you're saying this to goad me into saying, yes, you are important, okay. But please, I want you to believe that you are important. You are. You're not just important to me. I don't want you just not to smoke or not to drink just for Barrett Andrews. I want you to do it for Ann Dowdell. I want you to have a sense of your real, real sweetness and worth. Okay, so you've got a temper, so you're impatient, da-da-da, all that, and I know. Okay? But to Barrett Andrews, you're very important. I want you to be important to yourself, too. I know this, too. All these very dear friends that you have are women. Are not enough to make you feel this way. This is one thing, one reason why I want to hang on to you as a friend. It takes a man to restore a woman. I understand that. And I'll be that to you until you're restored. Or I'll be that to you for the rest of your life if you wish. I went over, I caught a flashback of some of my talkings with Lisa Davis that I rubbed out. And all I want to tell Lisa and you is, of course, I get kind of sensitive, even in fun. I tell you, Ann, I've got a sense of humor. I can take a really deep, abstract matter and twist it around with some real humor and enjoy it. I'm good at this. I have a sense of humor. But I don't take statements lightly. And, statements like children are a disease and so forth. And it did kind of hurt me when you were laughing in the background there with Lisa's tape. You, I remember, I can visualize you when you laugh. And I remember the way you used to laugh when you were in high school. This kind of got to me a little bit, and so I went into a big spiel that I am not going to bother you two girls with. I'm sure that, well, I am prejudiced in favor of anyone who is your friend. Because you would pick people who are good friends. I really am. I feel in league with all of your friends as a part of a group who are helping to support you emotionally. And this is the way it'll always be, Ann. Your friends will always be my friends. Lisa Davis, Rhea Fort, you name them. Because we're on your side. Nancy O'Hara, even to the extent that she is on your side. And she may be, dominating and all that, Ann, but you two have so much between you. I think Nancy has a lot to her that I may be full of prunes. I never knew Nancy. I'm not pretending to, but she just impressed me as somebody who was a pretty good egg. And you went with her as a friend for a long, long time. It's Ann Dowdell who I'm thinking of in this category, and I just don't want you to lose something that you would regret later on losing. Because, Ann, I love you. I mean, I really, really love you. I get thinking about you at times, so many times, and something just kind of catches in my throat, and I almost start to cry, just because I miss you. Just because you are such a damned good influence in my life. You have no idea that you have been so wonderful in my life, Ann. I hope that 2.5 years of letters that you have and some of these tapes have told you this. You and Dowdell in the life of Barrett Andrews. As usual, I'm going to have to break at any moment, so if I go out kind of suddenly and there's a discontinuity in here, please understand. Will you, Ann? I was thinking, had I ever known that you were going with, say, Alan McGuire, or somebody that was, chauvinistic after a fashion, as he seemed to be, I really would have been heartbroken. I wouldn't have been so heartbroken had I known that you were going with a Power Hearn or a Johnny Poor, with whom you played tennis, and you're, you know, being your natural athletic self. This would have been quite natural. I would have been jealous of the guys, but I would have thought, gee, I think it's great that Ann has found somebody to whom she could evidently relate and really enjoy life with, and I want her to have happiness. But it would have really chewed me up to have you taken to pieces emotionally by somebody who wasn't able to relate, apparently, to a woman in quite the way that you need relating to. Because one thing I always knew about you is that you needed total relating to. In this respect, darling, your life is not entirely a surprise to me, because you are a deeply, deeply sensitive person. I think I sensed this when we were 7. In fact, I told you I did. And I had a bit of a hunch in high school that maybe you were at a pace that really you couldn't tolerate, because you were popular, you were seeking friends, and I was just absolutely in a swivet, because something way inside of me told me, well, I was not capable of relating to you either because of my own lack of maturity. And yet, there's no sense in rambling on and on and on like this, I suppose. I won't have enough time to put on this one side of this tape to put on the music that I was hoping to have on it. I'm not putting on a show. I'm just kind of laying open my heart to you again. Incidentally, once again, your rendition of Power and Alan and John Poor and Spencer was just excellent, and also Mrs. Triano and your piano lessons. And I almost cry for you. In fact, I come very close to it, Ann, when I think of you crying when you came back from Mississippi after getting homesick, and when I think of you crying on your bed because you didn't make it at the piano rehearsal recital. I can't... I know, I want you to tell me these things because, in a sense, I really want to pick up... I want to understand your burden, your burdens, you. I am trying to see life through you, and this is why these tapes and all the information that the boys you went with and that you liked and you loved and you fancied and so forth really mean a great deal to me. There's a tremendous amount of information in what you have sent me so far about you. That's a tremendous amount of help to me, darling. My beloved, beloved Ann. So keep up with that kind of narration, will you? Yes, you've covered them beautifully. I I think back, I wish Happy Han had been a little bit more tender somewhere along the line there. Because I hate it with you when somebody hurts you. I almost can't stand it. And yet I know that life is so full of opportunities where we get hurt. And you're a beautiful girl. You are a beautiful woman now. You tell me you're fat and so forth. Maybe you got a little tummy, maybe you got a little double chin, and maybe some jowls and so forth, darling. But you're Barrett Andrews. You're beautiful, and I want you to know that. Because I know something about the soul inside. You can tell me you swear and use four-letter words and scream or whatever you want to do. Go right ahead and swear. Swearing doesn't bother me at all. I invented it. Believe me. You can use any language you want on these tapes and on the telephone. Just talk to me right from the heart, will you, sweetheart? And I went over a section on this one tape. I was talking to you on the phone yesterday morning. No, I guess it was Friday night. Friday night when you called me, and Kathy was in the kitchen. I'm not going back over this tape. I don't have enough time to. But I really appreciate it so much when you said that you didn't want any other woman to see me naked. And that really got to me, and I just love you for saying that. I just love you for saying that. I feel so much as though I belong to you when you put it that way, and I want to belong to you. I could belong to you body and soul. I could be your personal property. And I just love it. So tell me things like that. Tell me in the tapes. I love that. I go back and play those parts over, darling. Believe me. I want to pick up some of my own autobiography again because there's things about me that, I want you to see life through my eyes, too. Not because it's going to lead you to wisdom. It won't. But I think that one of the things that about my relationship to you, perhaps, is because it will help you to know life from the side of a man more intimately, and thus to know men better, and thus to know yourself better. This is my entire idea in telling you all this. I wanted you as a repository of knowledge about me anyway, because I love you. And for this reason, that I thought it would be of a help. It's good if you, well, my own philosophy is that you can be a better woman, say, with reference to a man. And if I could be that man, that male, to whom you could relate, and thus recapture an awful lot of things that events in life cut to ribbons for you, then I would be giving you love in a fashion that I wanted to, that would really, really open things up for you, that would bring some music into your life that perhaps you hadn't had. So this is the reason for the autobiography on my part. I don't want to repeat what's in the letters. I might embellish. I shouldn't say embellish. I might fill in things that I had left out, as I occasionally do, to give them, more relevance, more relief, more relationship, to connect things a little bit better. But I forgot where I was. I think I was someplace in 1944 and before we'd gone overseas. And I'm not going to regale you with that. I had met Ruth Schissel at a dance at Camp McCoy, and apparently she had fallen in love with me. And we danced several times thereafter, and she came up to those dances and looked for me. And she was a very lovable kind of a person. She was very deeply unhappy at home. Her parents were very strict Lutherans. But she'd come to the Camp McCoy dances from La Crosse, which was 30 miles away, just about the way that I suppose you used to. You became a West Point girl. And she wrote me at camp, and don't think I went especially out of my way to look her up, because I had gone on furlough and met Ellen Smith on a blind date. And as I mentioned to you, I think I went to New York on a furlough, that last furlough in 1944. I can even remember leaving camp at night with couple of people. We caught a very late train out of the depot and got into Chicago at 8 o'clock and, the next morning. And, well, our unit was getting ready to go overseas. I remember we had a great big inspector general's visit. We shaped up every single thing. And we left Camp McCoy in the train late at night. The following morning, I think I mentioned to you by letter, we came through all this string of North Shore suburbs. And I had gotten kind of sweet on Alan Smith by that time, and the train halted about two blocks from our house. It halted. And I was on corridor guard at that time, and boy, did I want to get off. But of course, I didn't. So we went through the suburbs and around Chicago and headed out east and went through Springfield, Mass. And, I don't know, I didn't enjoy that train trip. You know, you're leaving the country, where the hell are you going to wind up? And we wound up at Camp Miles Standish near Taunton, Massachusetts, probably